RadioInfluence.com.
You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to In the Trenches. This is Ian Beckles on this fine draft week. First and foremost, I want to give love to our title sponsor, Hess Spinal Centers. There are 60 locations here in the Bay Area. 1-800-618-HESS. Don't stress. Call Hess. If you go through a tough time, you go through a car accident, you're suffering injuries, and, you know, it's not always easy. We don't always know what to do. So if you get in a car accident and you just need knowledge, you need to call my people at Hess Spinal Centers. Once again, 16 locations, 1-800-618-HESS. Don't stress, call Hess. Now, this is draft week. I've already starting to get draft questions. I like to talk about the draft, you know, under my rules. A lot of people want to hear my opinion on players, and I'm just going to say I'm not going to get in depth on a lot of young football players because I've not put in that type of work, because I have the utmost respect for scouts that do that for a living. So for me to tell you whether I think Quentin Nelson is a great offensive lineman, I haven't put in my work. If I have some time, I may sit down and watch a couple of his films and then see what he's all about. But you know, it doesn't make sense for me to do that unless the Buccaneers choose him. Whoever the Buccaneers choose at number 7, I'll investigate him a little bit. I'll look up some of their film. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether I think they're a good football player or not, because that's the choice is already made. But obviously, this is a very important draft for the Buccaneers and a lot of other football teams out there. The draft is happening Thursday, AT&T Stadium, Arlington, Texas. The draft has become a monster as far as ratings go, as far as advertising goes, and they're getting the most out of it on, you know, network television. And didn't used to be this big of a deal, but it really is a big deal these days. So our Buccaneers have the 7th pick overall. I don't do mock drafts. I don't want to do that. The teams that are before them, the Browns, the Giants, the Jets, Browns again, Broncos, Colts. Now, out of all those teams, Browns, Giants, Jets, there's no quarterbacks up there other than Andrew Luck. And I got some news for you. The Colts better start worrying about life after Andrew Luck, because they almost already have been dealing with that. To this point, you know, Andrew Luck to me is just a name. I haven't seen Andrew Luck play a good football game in years. So if you think he's going to come, you know, off the bench or, you know, off the street and just come out and, you know, start 16 games, it doesn't work that way. For you to sit out that many weeks and not play, there's something structurally wrong with your body. I believe it's your shoulder. So out of all those teams above the Bucs, they all need quarterbacks. So I foresee 3 quarterbacks going out of the 6 picks ahead of us. And the Bucs don't have that problem, obviously, with Jameis Winston. Hey, and Ryan Fitzpatrick. We don't even need a backup quarterback. So that's we're in as good a situation as everybody, as anybody in the league. Not saying we have the best situation, we're in as good a situation. Whatever falls to the Bucs, and we don't know what's going to fall to the Bucs. Some people have been talking about Saquon Barkley, you know, the running back for Penn State. I've said that I believe he's probably the most talented football player in the draft. I've also said many times I don't know if I would waste a number 1 pick. Although, if he falls to 7, I don't think the Bucs can pass him up. I don't think it's even a possibility. I just think for recognition, for buzz, getting whoever gets his kid is going to get a good buzz, because he's going to sell jerseys. He's an explosive football player, and he's an extremely talented football player. And as much as I dislike taking a running back in the first round, in the last couple of years, there's been a couple running backs to get it done. We know about Zeke Elliott, obviously, and he's stayed healthy to this point. Zeke Elliott looks like a different running back than everybody else to me. He seems like an old school running back that's going to be able to endure what's going on there in the NFL. Todd Gurley had a monster year last year, although his career's kind of been up and down with some, you know, he had some injuries here and there that slowed him down, but last year he was absolutely a beast. Leonard Fournette, when he's healthy, is effective. I wouldn't put a lot of stock in him because I just don't think he's going to stay healthy with his style of running. Then they had Christian McCaffrey. I wouldn't even really call Christian McCaffrey a running back, more as a hybrid type of guy. And that's definitely not what Saquon Barkley is. Saquon Barkley is more of a roughhouse runner. And then there was Alvin Kamara last year that came out of really nowhere, although a lot of scouts had him highly rated and really, when healthy, was amazing for the Saints. So lately there's been some running backs come out and be successful and help their teams win some games, which is important. But to me, it's still taking a chance when you're taking a running back. But if he falls at 7, the Bucs absolutely have to take him. From what everybody says and the way things should line up, and we still don't know. Like, the thing we don't know is the Browns aren't one player away from being great. We all know that, right? And a good friend of mine, I can say that because I grew up with him, Alonzo Highsmith, is running things over there in Cleveland. What if somebody really wants any player? Doesn't matter who it is. And they say, the Browns, we want that pick. And the Browns are able to, fall down and take one or two other first rounders and maybe another second rounder. I guarantee the Browns will at least listen. I don't think anybody in the draft is that damn impressive that you can't give up that first pick. The Browns are certainly not one player away from being anything. That's for sure. So, in a perfect world, not saying perfect world for the Bucs, but if things go as planned, it looks like somebody like Quentin Nelson would probably be a pick. That would be a safe pick, unless Jason Light goes out, comes and does something silly. But once again, we don't know who's going to fall. We have no idea. From, I would see 60%, 70%, a lot of things I saw was Quentin Nelson. And I'm okay with that. At the end of last year, if you go back and listen to In the Trenches when I finished the season, I said, even though this was a very disappointing football season, I think the Bucs are two offensive linemen and two defensive linemen away from being a good football team. Now, for sure, we brought in two good defensive linemen in free agency, and they've helped themselves out a little bit on offense. They have some returners. They're moving Ali Marpet back to guard, which I thought they should have done for sure. And if they bring in a good young kid that has some spirit and that can run block a little bit, running the football is going to be essential this year. So if they go with a Quentin Nelson, I think that's a safe pick. Now, if something crazy happens and Bradley Chubb falls to number 7, I'm not sure they can pass him up. I mean, if you could get the best pass rusher in the game or in the draft at number 7, I don't know if they could pass him up. That would make the most sense. I don't know if he's going to fall to 7. But if you can get the best of any position at 7, that's not a bad deal. Been looking up on Bradley Chubb. I like his attitude. He's got a little swag to him. He's got a little cockiness to him. Some people don't like cockiness. I happen to absolutely love cockiness. I think it's essential in the NFL. So Thursday, everybody's going to sit back. They're going to watch the draft. They're going to have a soda and sit back forever and listen to everybody talk forever about one football player. I don't know why the hell you need 15 damn minutes when everybody knows who the hell you're going to pick. I guess there has to be some time for some transactions and stuff, but I find it to be long and drawn out. 15 minutes a team, and there's 32 teams out there. It takes a long damn time out there. Now, I've already sent out my wish list. Really, the only guy I'm really asking for is Shaquem Griffin. That's who I'm really asking for. Last week, I talked about a scenario of having a 3-down lineman and having 3 aggressive, talented, physical, fast linebackers kind of milling around and having some different blitz schemes. Shaquem Griffin, to me, we all know who the UCF kid, one hand, St. Petersburg native. Now, you got to sell tickets as well. You got to create and stir a little buzz. I guarantee if that kid signs with the Buccaneers, he's going to sell some tickets. Guaranteed. I haven't got a chance to meet him. I've been asking to meet him. If anybody knows him, I'd love to get a chance to sit down with him, get him on my show, maybe get him on my podcast, never know, or get him on the radio. Because I like what he's about. I mean, I like the fact that when you talk about Shaquem Griffin to his coaches in college, ask somebody who's coaching college what they're all about, and the coaches will tell you exactly what the kid's all about. I'm telling you, they will. And they won't lie to you. They won't. You know, some players are very talented physically. Some players have great work ethic. Some players have a little bit more leadership skills. When I heard Scott Frost talking about Shaquem Griffin, it was all about first in, last out, hardest worker, great teammate, you know, just aggressive, best practice player ever. When you hear stuff like that, you can't hurt your football team by bringing that attitude into your locker room. You can't. You know what hurts locker rooms? Sometimes talent hurts locker rooms, because sometimes talent comes with, you know, a lack of, you know, preparation. You know, a lot of these kids that get to this point in college have gotten to this point because they're fantastic athletes. When you take the next step to the next level and you go from college to pros, you could be a great athlete, okay? If you're a great athlete and you're a cornerback and you don't watch film on Jerry Rice, he's going to turn you inside out. You have to be able to anticipate some things as a football player. So it's not just about being a great athlete. It's about having great technique. It's about being a student of the game. So I ran into Steve DeBerg on Saturday. I had an event over there at Cheval, and he was there with his lovely daughter. And I was talking to him a little bit about, you know, the game and how it's changed and how it hasn't changed. And he was joking around how he doesn't know how he lasted so long because he's a dummy. Steve is hardly a dummy. You know, Steve knew the game of football as well as all the coaches did. Steve ran the huddle, and when I played with Steve DeBerg, was at the end of his career, and he was getting kind of old, but he walked in the huddle room and huddled, and he said, "This is my goddamn huddle. Everybody shut the hell up," and everybody shut up. And he was one of those old guys that warranted respect. So we need some more of those football players on our team, and you can't have enough leadership in your locker room. That's why Shaquem Griffin, to me, would be a wonderful pick. I don't know where he's going to go, because with him is going to come hoopla, and not bad hoopla. Like, there is bad hoopla. Michael Sams had bad hoopla. Tim Tebow, in a funny, awkward way, has bad hoopla. It's almost too much hoopla, and it affects. This kid, Shaquem Griffin, I guarantee is going to be a rock star immediately. If he can play and he gets out there and he can play, he's going to make a lot of money off the football field. But what they say is, you know, I'm all about, you know, the combine's great. It's wonderful. You know, bench press, I really don't care. When I put the film on, and I haven't sat and studied him, you know, as a true scout, but I watched some UCF football towards the end of the season because I know Scott Frost slightly, because I was with him with the Jets. It's a Florida team. It was a big hype. They were undefeated. So they were on. I saw a good four of their games last year and maybe a couple of their games a year before. And I never once watched where he wasn't omnipresent. I mean, he was everywhere all the time, hunting people down from behind, aggressive, tenacious, never stopping. And you can't teach that, I'm telling you. Those are the kind of things that rub off on other athletes. And when you see a kid like that playing that hard in that situation, and you put on a film on Monday and you're half-assing it, you're going to be exposed. And nobody wants to get exposed, that's for sure. So the draft is coming up. You know, there's a lot of different things that get measured in the draft. And I've talked before about having played 9 years in the league. I'm 6'1". I mean, I probably used to be 6'1". I'm probably might be closer to 6 foot now because I probably don't walk as upright. But being 6'1" coming out of college was a big deal as far as the scouts go. And I've had a scout from the Raiders say to me, "Man, you're a hell of a player. If you were 6'4", we'd take you in the first round." And I wanted to say to him, what the hell difference does it make? If you put the film on and I can block the same dudes that 6'4 guys are going to block, what difference does it make? The only difference is you're just not as valuable if you're shorter. And nobody wants to take a chance on a shorter player, because if it doesn't work, people are going to go, "You see, he's short." I saw an interview with Russell Wilson, who, by the way, when he came out in the draft, I want to say he was a third rounder maybe. When he came out in the draft, I said to take him first. Now, if I had the first pick, I wouldn't take him first because that would be idiotic. But I said that Russell Wilson's the best player in that draft, and I'm not sure I wasn't wrong. Now, Russell Wilson is 5'10", because he had an interview with Baker Mayfield, who is about 6 foot, and he was towering over Russell Wilson. But I would take Russell Wilson as my quarterback right now over, I don't know how many quarterbacks I put ahead of Russell Wilson right now. If you could say you could have a quarterback for the next 5 years, how many quarterbacks do you think you would take ahead of Russell Wilson? Now, I'm not saying he's better than Tom Brady. I'm not saying he's better than Ben Roethlisberger. But I do know this. If you're going to take a player for 5 more years, you wouldn't take Tom Brady, would you? Not if you just... You know, Tom Brady, if you put Tom Brady on a different team right now, I don't know if it works. And that's not downplaying what he does. But Russell Wilson has the ability to use his athletic ability to get away from problems. And if things aren't completely copacetic with Tom Brady, he's not at the time of his career where he's going to be doing a whole lot of improvising. But I'm not dogging Tom Brady. I think he's the best of all time. I don't think that's even an argument anymore. But, you know, they were talking about being undersized and being short and, you know, how you get overlooked. And I had this discussion with somebody the other day, and they said, man, imagine you were 6'6". Imagine how good you would have been. Imagine how much better a football player you would have been. And I said, if I was 6'6", I probably wouldn't have worked as hard because I was being overlooked every damn where. If you're 6'6", you know, it's. I'm going to give you a great analogy. If you go to the club, you know, the cheerleaders don't have to work hard, okay? They're going to get them a man. That's just going to work. They're pretty. They have great bodies. They're going to get a man. If you're 6'6", and you're a good-looking athlete, things just happen. I mean, that's what you're put on earth for. I just wasn't built like a lot of other linemen or maybe any other linemen. So I had to play a little harder than everybody else. I always had to look over my shoulder. I started for 9 years. And I looked over my shoulder all 9 years because it seemed like they were trying to replace me all the time with a bigger player, and actually said that much a few times. I just didn't allow it to happen. But if you look at a player like Russell Wilson, and I don't know if Baker Mayfield is going to make it. I wouldn't try it. I wouldn't. I just don't see his game translating to the NFL. I see a little Johnny Manziel in him. And he's got a little immaturity like Johnny had. And I just don't know if his body type is going to work. Russell Wilson's a different dude, man. That's a different type of athlete. And, you know, you're still taking a chance if you're taking a shorter quarterback, especially. If everybody remembers Doug Flutie, if you don't think Doug Flutie was a great football player, go back and watch that. I mean, Doug Flutie almost, he was a savant almost, because I seen him completing passes in the pocket at 5'9", with 6'7" guys in front of him, and throwing in lanes. And, you know, when you're undersized and you don't have the same ability, you have to figure things out. And he's adapted and he figures things out. I sat across from Doug Flutie at training camp when I was in Philadelphia when we were scrimmaging the Buffalo Bills. And I just thought he was somebody's granddad. Like, he was the smallest looking. I mean, he was probably 5'9", 180. And I'm like, who's that dude? Somebody goes, that's Doug Flutie. And I was a fan of his, but when I saw him in person, there's no way that's Doug Flutie. There's no way. That's the dude that goes out in an NFL football field and balls out like that. But Doug Flutie looks like somebody's dad, somebody's old dad. But as far as an athlete, they said he was nobody competed like that. And you know, when I'm watching all these workouts and people evaluating quarterbacks, I think it's funny because I find that scouts and a lot of, you know, people, you know, evaluating talent make the same mistakes over and over. These are the things that I love to hear. He can make all the throws. But let me let you know this. Platt High School has 3 quarterbacks on their roster that could probably make all the throws. That's real talk. I mean, there's quarterbacks in high school that are throwing 60-yard passes on the money. I mean, there are. There's quarterbacks in high school that have as strong arms as, I know they're stronger than probably Drew Brees is at this time. You know, Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl. He could barely throw the ball 25 yards. Brad Johnson didn't have a big arm. A lot of quarterbacks didn't have big arms. being able to make all the throws is the most overrated crap I've ever heard in my life. Jeff George has the strongest arm I've ever seen on a football field ever. He can make every throw, but he didn't get it out. It's not about being able to make the throw. It's about knowledge and knowing where to throw the ball and when. Brad Johnson looks over a defense, and Brad did not have a strong arm. But if you know where the ball's going, you can throw the ball 2 seconds earlier than everybody else. That's why Brad Johnson didn't take a lot of sacks, and that's why Brad Johnson didn't make a lot of mental errors, because he's pre-reading play, and as a veteran and a student of the game, he knows where to go with the football. Vinny Testaverde, when he first got in the league, Vinny didn't know where to go at first. You know why? Because he didn't have great teachers. He didn't have great players around him. When I was with Vinny as a rookie, Vinny was confused. And you look in somebody's eyes, he's confused. And then in my 10th year, which would have been Vinny's 15th year when we reunited in New York with the Jets, I look in his eyes and he was a 15-year vet that knew exactly where he was going with the ball and when, and didn't make bonehead decisions. So that's kind of the evolution of quarterbacks and the way they go. Like our quarterback here, Jameis Winston, the passing game is changing. It's more of a short passing game. I think that's the evolution of football. It's not just to throw the ball down the field. I think we tried that maybe too much last year, and that's not Jameis' strength. But Jameis has to take another step mentally this year to where the quarterback, the coach has enough confidence in him to maybe have to make 7 passes in a drive to score a touchdown. I'm not sure Dirk Cutter has that much confidence in Jameis Winston, nor do I at this point. Because, you know, you might win a game where Tom Brady throws 45 passes or Drew Brees throws 45 passes. If Jameis Winston throws 45 passes at this point, I'm not confident. Because he has 5 plays in him. Out of 45 throws, you'll have 5 plays where you'll go, don't do that. And those turn into losses. And even though the Bucs scored a lot of points last year, there was still a lot of points left on the field because of some questionable decision-making by Jameis at times. You can't blame Jameis for what happened last year. Jameis is still one of our better football players. But he has to take it to another level now to where people are starting to – they're talking about him being a young football player. That's old now. Jameis being young is over. He's been in the league long enough. He's had 3 full seasons, and he ain't young no more. Great quarterbacks, even good quarterbacks, figured out a way to take their team to the playoffs in their first 4 years. I don't know if there's a good quarterback that didn't do that. I mean, you can look it up, but I doubt it very much. If you were the starter for 3 straight years, you had to figure out a way to get your teams to the playoffs, period. So Jameis has no more excuses. I don't want to hear about supporting cast. If you're that great and you're going to be this and that, it's time. It's time for you to warrant greatness from everybody around you, because I think he has that mentality. I'm not sure he knows how to do it yet. There's other quarterbacks. I know you bring up Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. Those are some of the best ever. But you're not going to run a wrong route with Tom Brady. You're just not, because he warrants more respect than that. Jameis is not at that point yet, but listen, he's heading that way, but this is a crucial season for Jameis, and it's a crucial season for Dirk Cutter and a lot of people out there. It's a crucial season for Gerald McCoy. Now, Gerald McCoy is going to be fine. He's going to make his money. But if Gerald McCoy wants to put a stamp on his legacy here, and his legacy here is going to be one of the best Buccaneer players ever already from, you know, the accolades that he's come to this point. But I've never really seen this before in my football career. I'm just going to be and Gerald McCoy, I said, and listen, everybody knows how critical I am of Gerald McCoy. I'm not hiding that, and I never will. But have anybody ever seen, I want to say he's been to 6 Pro Bowls, maybe 7. I'm not sure what the number is, but it's a lot of Pro Bowls on the cusp of Hall of Fame status, okay? I mean, if you're just talking Pro Bowls, not statistics, you're just talking Pro Bowls, he's on the cusp of Hall of Fame status. Have you ever seen a borderline Hall of Fame player get called out as much as Gerald McCoy? I never have. You remember Brian Cox that coached here a few years ago, and Brian Cox told Gerald McCoy, Stop picking people up off the ground. Toughen up. You got to be a batter, son of a bitch. And Gerald said, well, that's not really me. I said the same thing on air. You can't pick people up. You got to be, you can't be nice. You can't be nice and lead a defense. You can't. Never happened. Nice people can't lead defenses. Sorry. You are not the exception. Gerald's been in the league 8 years, maybe. And Quan Alexander, who's been in the league, I believe it's his third year, he says he wants more dog out of McCoy. Isn't that crazy that a third-year player is going to call out a perennial Pro Bowler about having dog in him? Who else could have done? What other perennial Pro Bowler at defensive lineman could somebody have said, you need more dog in you? Because once again, Quan Alexander is putting a stamp on everything I've been saying. Brian Cox questioned him years ago. You know who was a dog? Brian Cox. You know who else is a dog? Quan Alexander. A dog can see a dog now. You can't hide that. And you know, Quan didn't call him out to where he was challenging his manhood. Listen to what he says. And these are his words, and I wrote them down. I want him to put a little more dog into it. Even if you're a Gerald McCoy fan, you should agree with that. I hope. This is not me saying he's a bad guy. It's not me saying he's a bad football player. He needs to put a little more dog into it. You need to bend over a couple offensive linemen and look in their face and talk about their mother a little bit. Because you know what? It's hard when somebody's whooping your ass and talk about your mother at the same time. Been there. I've also done that as well. If you're whooping somebody's ass and you're talking bad about them, you could demoralize people and you could take over games. As many Pro Bowls you've been to, you can't show me 6 games that Gerald McCoy took over. No way. Not a chance. When I mean take over, I mean you are the most disruptive player on the football field. No way you can find me 6. Because statistically, he doesn't do that. We don't win many games. We're not very high rated at anything. So it's just he's not taking anything over. And I'm seeing players. When I see a Donald from the Rams, he takes games over. Khalil Mack takes games over. There's a bunch of people out there, you go, man, this kid is everywhere. And I'm not asking for that from Gerald McCoy because I don't think he has it in him. But you can be a bitch, though. You can be a little bit more of a son of a bitch. I think that's necessary. Everybody can. And another one, I need a little more dog. Those are the 2 things he said. Put a little more dog into it. I need a little bit more dog. Because, you know, when you're out there on the field and it's nitty-gritty time and a time is crucial, you like to look in somebody's eyes and see a little mean. That helps. Nice is not great in the fourth quarter when it's crucial. It's not. Because we still don't have that defensive lineman that is going to make that play when necessary to win football games because we've not done that yet. So let's keep an eye on that. And listen, you guys know me now. I don't like a lot of players. You gotta win me over. Quan Alexander had me in game 1, okay? Documented. And Quan came out and said, nope, I am the leader. It goes through me. Thank you, Quan. I appreciate you. And I appreciate what you're about because we need a lot more mean out there. No doubt about it. There's rumors out there that Earl Thomas is going with the Dallas Cowboys for all you Dallas Cowboy fans out there. I think Earl Thomas' best years may be behind him, but I think he can still play. Aaron Rodgers wants to stay in Green Bay, and he wants to be partial owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. If Aaron Rodgers, if his contract's up, they better pull that truck up because he can get whatever. You got to give him 35 to 40. 100 and what? If you gave John Gruden $100 million guaranteed, you got to give Aaron Rodgers about 150, don't you? Something close to that? I don't know, but they're in trouble when they try to get that done because Aaron Rodgers is Green Bay. That's it. You don't want to lose him right now because that's you don't want to put him out in the market either. Now, there's one other thing that I saw this week that I thought was crazy, and on my other podcast, Flavor in Your Ear, I talk a little bit more about politics and, we talk a little bit about sports, but pop culture. And this is something that can be in both. Jay Feely, who used to play here with the Bucks, I want to say he played for the Falcons, the Giants. He's been to quite a few different teams. He put out a picture in social media. I played golf with Jay Feely one time, and nice kid. Can hit the hell out the golf ball, for God's sakes. So he has a picture of himself in social media with a very lovely daughter at the prom and his daughter's boyfriend, who had been dating his daughter for a year, and I guess who he likes quite a bit. And he's, you know, this young man is taking his daughter out in prom, and everybody knows what happens in prom a lot. You know, there's probably a limousine and there's probably some alcohol happening, which usually happens. And Jay Feely just wanted to make a point to let this young man and every other young man know that you will have to respect my daughter. So Jay Feely, I don't want to say in his right mind, I don't know if he thought it through completely, but took a picture of himself, his daughter, her boyfriend going to prom, and Jay had a gun in his hand, a revolver. And people went batshit crazy. Oh my God, gun safety, gun, blah, blah. We overreact a whole lot. Now, I don't know if Jay thought about it all completely, okay? He might have thought about it a little bit. But people are up in arms, man. Guns, it's just not the time to be messing around with guns. It's not. It's not. The funny part is I used to have my little, the little thing on your social media that shows who you are. I had a picture of myself with an AR-15 that I had. One day I went to Gennaro's over on the beach, and Marcello showed me his gun. So I took a picture with the gun, and I posted it, and I got so many gun likes. It was crazy. Gun people love guns. And they were so excited to see me with the gun. I think guys were running batches with me of the picture of me with guns. So I put it as my little icon there. And it was there for quite a while. And this, I think I told the story before. The most ironic thing, after all those shootings happened, like, I've had it there for years. I never really think about it. And the one person that texted me and said, take it down, out of all the people in the world, Warren Sapp. Warren Sapp goes, dude, you got to take down that icon. This ain't the time. I looked at it, I realized he's 100% right. It's just not the time. I'm all for gun rights. I'm all for gun safety. But it's a sensitive time for guns right now. Still more shootings happening. Every week there seems to be shootings. And the thing is, we keep on talking about, we're still having the same conversation, the same narrative about the same goddamn things, and nothing ever gets done. So I don't know where that's going. But the Buccaneers have the draft coming up this Thursday. I'm sure you guys are going to be watching on television. I will be. I mean, like I said, I'm sure going to have a nice, cool soda pop with me somewhere. And I hope you guys sit back and relax and watch the game. And, you know, let's hope the Bucs bring somebody in that is going to make a difference this year, because that's what it's all about. Because, like I said, there's a lot of people on that hot seat. And if you look at that Buccaneers schedule, whoo. I'm not one to go down a schedule and tell you what's a winner or a loss, because I think that's absolutely ignorant. But, you know, for the Buccaneers to be messing around, you know, at New Orleans, come back with Philadelphia, and then play Pittsburgh on Monday night is a bitch. New Orleans is the toughest place on earth to play. I've said that many times. Philadelphia, when they come here in week two, and remember I said this, 33% of the stands is going to be Philadelphia. Okay, that's a fact. Because when that came out, I guarantee Philadelphia Eagle fans in Tampa, which there's a slew of, went up and bought up all the tickets. And then we got to hear these a-holes mouths in our stadium. So do me a favor and go buy up them damn tickets. But I guarantee that game is sold out. Philadelphia Eagle fan does not play that. And then you got to play Pittsburgh Steelers on Monday night. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are always a good football team. They're always good. They're not always great, but they're always good. So those are three bitches of a game to start a football season. If you can win two out of three of those games, you could be good enough to make the playoffs. But if you're not a good football team, you'll come out of that bitch 0-3, and then everybody's looking around. And I know the feeling. I've been there in the locker room when you're 0-3, and everybody's looking around, and everybody gets real butt hurt because everybody wants to kind of pass the buck, and it's not my fault. And then the season goes downhill real, real fast. And once the season goes downhill, people start pointing fingers, and then some people are going to have to go. So I don't want it to turn into that, because I'll be honest with you, I'm tired of change. We need some normalcy here in the Tampa Bay area so that we know who our quarterback's going to be. We know who our coach is going to be. We know what scheme we're running defensively, and we know what we're about. They know that in Pittsburgh. They know that in Seattle. You know, they know what a New England, obviously. And we just don't know that. We never have, actually. Actually, yes, we have. During the Tony Dungy era, from 96 through 2001, we knew exactly what we were. We had an identity. We won football games. We knew what we were trying to get accomplished. I'm just not completely sure what we're trying to get accomplished. So let's hope that Jason Light can get that done in this draft and pluck us out a good football player. Once again, let me give some love to Hess Spinal Centers, 16 locations, 1-800-618-HESS. Give them a call to get in a car accident. If you guys want to email me, ianbeckles@radioinfluence.com. And once again, I have one other podcast, Flavor in Your Ear, that usually comes out Friday morning. So you want to check that out if you want to hear a little bit more about pop culture, politics, and maybe a little bit more sports. And I'll probably talk about the draft a little bit since it's going to be Friday. So it'll be maybe a little bit more football on that Friday podcast. So maybe you want to tune into that. So I appreciate you guys listening in. The numbers have been great. They've been steady going up. Sometimes it's me solo, and sometimes I'll have a guest, but it'll always be interesting. And next week, for sure, we want to definitely talk about the draft. So hope you tune in again. Everybody have a wonderful week, and hope you enjoy the draft. Peace out.
You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Some draft day decisions that I thought were always interesting was the Bengals in 71 were going to take Joe Theismann before Bill Walsh worked out and convinced Paul Brown to draft Augustana quarterback Ken Anderson. In 1972, I remember the Steelers coach Chuck Noll wanted to take Robert Newhouse, the Houston running back, but Art Rooney Jr. convinced him to take Penn State running back Franco Harris. 1979, the Packers scouts wanted, particularly Red Cockburn, wanted to draft Notre Dame quarterback Joe Montana, but coach and general manager Bart Starr was not sure about Montana, and instead they drafted Maryland defensive tackle Charles Johnson. In 79, the Giants took Morehead State quarterback Phil Sims over Jack Thompson and Steve Fuller. In 1981, having missed out on Joe Montana, the Packers head coach and general manager Bart Starr had to get a quarterback, try to save his job, and he took Cal quarterback Rich Campbell, overruling the scouts who wanted to take USC safety corner Ronnie Lott.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.